B-Pod Studios.
Good morning, guys. How's everyone today?
Oh, it's just a day after day of delight.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich, and we're waiting on Will Brinson. If you're fortunate enough to have some place to go during this shutdown that seems to be easing up a little bit, the Jacksonville Jaguars are starting camp today. It looks like, in terms of sports, things are easing slowly back into some sort of play. If you're fortunate to have somewhere to go, maybe you're doing things that you don't normally do. So my children have been rafting and, tubing. And I still won't drive the boat. The boat is something I will not drive.
Is that a father problem, though? It has been in the past.
He is more than willing to let me drive it, but there is so much damage that has been done since the boat has been purchased that it is and my dad still – the worst is, like, when there's – okay, so the neighbor next door to us on our left is a – ex-army pilot, and his son-in-law, or his son, is a pilot. So, his son comes over to the house and, takes the jet ski out and goes, 90 miles. I mean, he's a good guy, a nice guy. He goes out and takes the jet ski out. He goes, 90 miles an hour, and, he can park the boat, in backwards. He can do all this crazy stuff because the docks are just about 3 inches on each side of maybe 6 inches each side of the boat, because you're pulling it into an actual structure. You're not just pulling it up to one side of a dock.
It's an open-ended rectangle that the boat fits in perfectly.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yes, exactly. That is well put. So I won't do that because the last time I tried it, I put a nice dent into it. So because I lose my mind. Because I lose my mind because there's nothing easier than driving a boat. Once you're on the water, it's the easiest thing in the world. But, I mean, you can go as fast as you want, and it's still easy.
But docking it, putting it onto a mooring, I mean, that stuff, it's a little intimidating.
If the neighbors are on the dock, my dad becomes completely petrified and nervous about getting the boat into the dock. And, it's a big thrill for him when he can do it when the neighbors are out there. And for my mother getting on the boat, she is a hit or miss proposition. So the water's been unusually high here. So my mother was getting on the boat, and she's like, okay, I don't want to get on the boat. There was a lot of waves, and the water was high, and she's like, I don't want to get on the boat. And so my dad's like, grab my hand. And she grabs his hand, and she's like, I don't want to get on the boat. And he starts yanking her on the boat. I don't want to get on the boat. And so that whole thing happened, and she did not get on the boat. So I go tubing with my son, where it's one of those ones that you lay on and you hold on.
Oh, first of all, have you ever done that before?
Yeah.
I couldn't do it now, but I used to love doing that. And you would get, sometimes you'd tie 2 to 3 tubes on the back, and they'd be two of your friends. And the game was to see who could last the longest. You try to kick each other off.
Yeah, that seems like a really bad idea.
That's because called redneck fun where I grew up.
No, they do it here. I saw a guy pulling 3 tubes in on the back of one of the tubes. They had a kid kneeboarding.
You hit the wake and just let them fly.
Yeah, but the thing about, it's not the kids hitting each other that would concern me about the 3 tubes. It's making the turns. In a cove, because when you make the turn and everyone's flying out
off the wake and you get air.
It's hitting a dock.
It's
taking them and hitting the dock. I don't care about them.
Okay.
Yeah, if they fall off the
right.
Yeah, if they fall off the. No, they do it here in the cove. They do it. They run around in the cove. So I go, all right, this is going to be fun and games. I go, I'm going to go out in the tube, and I'm going to hang on to this thing. So I go out, and sure enough, Zoe, will you shut the door, please? I go, yeah, hold on. So I go out and I get on the tube with my son, and here we go. 40 minutes, I'm getting very tired. And I'm fat enough that, like, the rope that's being held by the boat, like, frays enough that it comes flying off. So they kind of double knot it or something. Like the rope is not meant for someone as heavy as myself. And so that frays, and that's embarrassing. So la, 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 and then I get sick of it. So they pull me in, and there is a ladder on the boat. Now, why the hell do they make the ladder on the boat? That it doesn't, it comes up to like your waist. Like the first step's not till your waist, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And it moves around. So I get up. When has this happened to me? I mean, people joke around about me. And I understand that I had to have a guy pull me in on a paddleboard, even though I've paddleboarded a million times. And I had to have a grown man, much younger than me, pull me in while we were in Turks and Caicos because I had swallowed so much water, I was vomiting up salt water. So I go, and now I'm panicking because I feel like I'll never get on the boat and that I will be trapped at sea. And I'll have to wade myself to land, and then navigate my way home. So this is all going. I'm like want a compass. I don't know where I'm going. And so now I might as well be on, that's a perfect storm boat. I might as well be there should be a widow's peak on the house, looking around for where's Fred, because now I've convinced myself I've convinced myself when I see where the ladder comes down to that there's no way I'm getting back up on the boat. So, Zoe, I'm on the air. So you can speak of this, Zoe. So I go and I get and I put my foot on the boat and I'm like shaking on the ladder and I'm like shaking. And then the ladder comes out and then crashes against my finger. Now my finger is trapped between the boat and the ladder. I cannot move it, for I am on the ladder. So my bone squishes visibly, like my finger like goes down visibly, like flattens. And I'm going, ow, ow, ow. And my dad's like, hey, can you guys move the raft to make sure the rope doesn't get in the motor? And I'm like, ah, ah. Yeah, the rope. I don't want it in the motor. Make sure the rope doesn't get caught in the motor. Motor's off, by the way. Ah. Finally, get out, get up. My wife has to come grab my hand. I mean, this is so embarrassing. My wife has to grab my hand. We get on the boat. I look at my hand. It's my finger. It's completely blue. Blood's pouring out of it. So time passes. Zoe goes, oh, my God, Daddy, your foot's bleeding. It's like bleeding so bad. And my dad looks at me and he goes, ah, it's just a callus. He says, oh, it's just a callus. So I go inside, and time passes, and I look down, and my foot is legitimately drenched in blood. I have sliced my left heel deeply, and it is pumping blood through all over. And now there's blood all over because we had to put a sheet on the couch. And it looked like a girl slept over, and that time of the month unexpectedly happened. So, if you want an analogy, the sheet is covered in blood, but the word callus is such an odd term there, because to my knowledge, wouldn't you say that a callus is something where skin has become rough due to
it's like hardened skin.
It's hardened skin, not blood soaked, mangled, cut skin. That's not what I usually associate with that. So somehow by doing a tubing, which thousands of children do on a Memorial Day, I have somehow managed to come very close to breaking my finger, which is now in shreds, and have cut the back of my foot, all from trying to climb up a boat ladder. By the way, I'm only 45. Can you imagine what this is going to be like when I'm 55? I mean, what am I going to be able to do? I can't drive the boat. Like, say I spend a lot of time here. I can't drive the boat. I can't climb up the ladder. I still am using the learning key on the jet ski, even though I've been on it for 18 hours, according, because that's how they track your usage, is hours. I've been on that thing for a total of 18 hours, and I still use the learning key, because I'm afraid if I use the other key, it'll go too fast. So, this is not going to get any better. All this is just going to get worse.
Was there like tons of blood? Tell me about the violence.
Hey, looks like I hooked myself a wild one. Hey, look, there's a tuber. Hey, psh, got him.
Dan,
reeling
turn me
him
up,
in.
Buddy.
Reeling him in.
Feel the pain.
Ooh, yeah, that's the stuff. What color?
Same mercy.
Did it get to be another color? Because so much came out. Were you feeling faint? Did it hit an artery? Tell me.
Opened up fury right here on the eyelash, right here on this eyelid. It was gushing blood and fury.
Oh, love it.
Pushed it aside, fought through the whole thing, and
jeez, dude,
finally prevailed on the fight. But
love good violence.
That was a good night. So I
did I tell you? Because I've told you guys the story about when I was out when they first moved here and they had a dog and we were fishing. And I came in and I stepped on a hook and it got lodged in my foot to the point where I couldn't take it out. And I went, ah, there's my foot. There's a thing in my a hook in my foot, Dad. I got to get out of here. It's gushing blood. And we were pulling into the dock, and the dog started to try to jump off the front of the boat onto the dock. And my dad just was like, babe, and spent 10 minutes trying to navigate the dog getting off of the dock while I sat there covered in blood and then eventually had to go to the hospital. This is what goes on here.
Jeez.
My life when I'm 55 is going to be absolutely miserable, and there's nothing I can do about it. Ugh. Blood.
So
sweet.
Much blood.
Violence, nifty. Hey, kids. It's Sesame Street. It's a new one called, I'm a new character called Bleeding Out Bob. Uh-oh.
Bleeding Out Bob?
Yeah. Hey. I stepped on a pickaxe. Will someone help me out? No.
Cool beans.
My blood is now turned black. It means it's the death of me.
You can't see me.
Big Bird, you're covered in blood. Where's Snuffleupagus, you silly goose?
Hang on. This is blood-obsessed Sesame Street J. Stew?
Yeah. Hey, Snuffleupagus, where you been, Jack? Oscar, what did you do? You cut yourself on that rusty trash can? Uh-oh, I hope you got your tetanus shot, because you're bleeding, baby.
I do not have the Sesame Street theme. I'm sorry.
Hey, guy who owns the general store, guess what? Slit, you're not alive. Sunny day, isn't it? Hey, sunny day, isn't it? Time to take the pain away.
Sunny day. Time to take the pain away.
All right, I know we're running late and we're kind of all over the place, but I will tell you about a movie when we come back. Yeah. All my neighbors that you'll never see again. Gonna tell you not to look. Not to look under my porch.
Feel the pain.
I will tell you when we come back about a movie called Butt. Oh, bro, okay. Eventually today, I will tell you about a movie called Butt Boy.
Oh, yeah. I've heard it's great. Like, the reviews are amazing on it. And, yeah. Like, the topic is nuts. Yeah, I was about to watch that the other night, as a matter of fact. I was, like, 2 seconds away from watching it.
I don't know if I can handle it.
That was my thing. I was torn between that one and a movie about a woman who is obsessed with swallowing strange objects. It's called Swallow. And like she's like a normal person, but like will look at like her kids will be playing jacks and she'll just pick up one of the jacks and when no one's looking, try to swallow it.
Ew. All right.
Yeah.
So is it real?
No, it's a movie, but it's a real condition, but it's a movie about a woman who has that, and it's like driving her insane. She finds new things, like crazy stuff to swallow.
That sounds like fun. Well, I just finished the Eugene Levy vehicle. All right, so we'll be right back. The Sports Hub. Will Brinson is a senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com, and he also hosts the Daily Pick 6 podcast. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hello, Mr. Brinson. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday after Memorial Day. We're reminded how free we are. How lucky.
That's right. I heard that you had a little issue in the house that there was.
Yeah, we got
Well, at least you don't have to go anywhere today. Well, Mr. Brinson, we see that Jacksonville is they're starting their training camp today, and we were talking about this. Troy Vincent was talking on the radio over there in Washington, I believe, saying that he believed that the NFL was going on right now expecting full attendance, expecting the stadiums to be open with no restrictions on fan attendance. I don't think he obviously believes that, but do you think that there will be fans in the stands this season? Because I know some places would like it, but if everyone doesn't allow it, will they allow it somewhere else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think that – I mean, in my opinion, what we'll get is, like, the option for some fans in the stands.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to have full attendance. I mean, I can't even imagine – I mean, maybe I'm – you know, soft, scared, whatever. But I can't imagine sitting next to, like, you know, you sit in a football game and you're sitting next to, like, I mean, like, you're next to somebody. Like,
you're touching
them. It's a stranger, and your legs and arms are rubbing, like, you know, every time you move and cheer.
It's a sexual dance. Yeah, it's like a sensual dance.
It's a combination. It's a tantric athletic dance. and in the case of like NC State, you know, it usually goes poorly and ends too quickly. But the I just can't imagine doing that. And so I have a difficult time suggesting that everyone will have fans. I do think you have to proceed as if there will be fans. But I mean, more than likely, there are going to be fundamental things about how we operate in general that are going to change. Like, I'm not saying we're going to always have one in, one out at Whole Foods or, you know, the grocery store, wherever you go. I mean, but, you know, humble bragger shop at Whole Foods. But the, or that you're going to have to be 6 feet apart, you know, at all times. I mean, I don't think that's going to be the case. And I don't think everybody's being these football games wearing masks. I hope not. But I mean, it is hard to imagine a stadium full of fans, although, when you look at some of the pictures of various parts of the country, there are certainly some teams that could fill up stadiums.
Now, to that, would the NFL allow there being, and this is kind of Fred's question, but would there be certain teams that would allow it and others that wouldn't, or would the NFL be like an all or nothing? Because wouldn't that give a certain team an advantage that a team without fans wouldn't have?
Yeah, I guess I didn't even really answer the question, and because I don't really know. I think the NFL will probably do a broad approach to it. I would be really surprised if they're like, whatever your state says, do that, and then, you know, New England, you know, the Patriots in a hypothetical, you know, get no fans, and the Jaguars get a stadium full of 50,000 drunk Florida men screaming at the top of their lungs for Gardner Minshew. Now, you know, that probably doesn't affect the competitive balance that much. Like, I guess in Jacksonville's case, you get some social distancing naturally anyway. But, you know, I think that, like, I think the NFL will probably put in a broad plan. But if we're talking about ways to improve local revenue and ways to keep the salary cap from, you know, collapsing in on itself, maybe they'll just let teams do whatever the states allow them to.
Well, we talked about how difficult it would be almost to even feign that you care about social distancing if you let in 50% of the fans, because how would a game end? Like, how would everybody be able to leave and there not be masses of people on the way out. That's the only thing that I can think. It's one thing to do it, and Fred said, you know, he makes a point. If their whole theory is, you know what you're getting into, we're going to make it a little bit better for people to have the ability to, you know, not be right next to someone. But it's not going to be
perfect. Is that if you say you have half a stadium filled up and you're expecting, you know, and then obviously the stadium.
Well, for instance, if you heard the Miami Dolphins plan, they're like, we're going to treat it like church. Have you been to a Dolphins game in the last 20 years?
I don't know what you're talking about, and neither is most of the audience. What was the Miami plan? Why was it like
we talked about this. It was back row first, and then
Fred, in front of it. Fred doesn't know anything about church.
An orderly recession.
I don't. I haven't been to church in 20 years.
It's so, like a wedding, Fred. It's like a wedding. You've been to a wedding before.
I have been
to
a wedding.
After, of course, the major party goes out, it's row by row by row. And that's what they would do. Except in this case, it would be from the back first.
Right.
And then so the people that are near the front would just gently wait for the 20 minutes that it would take for their entire crew to, you know, in front of them for the 20 rows.
Yeah. Bear in mind that 20 nothing. It'd be an hour. You're waiting.
Right.
You're sitting, and you are the rich guy who bought the 50 yard line tickets at the Miami Dolphins game to, like, you know, because you couldn't afford the box, but you wanted to buy the
deal.
Hello?
Is it me or is it his
phone? Uh-oh.
I think it's his phone. It's not you.
I think it's his phone. Yeah.
Well, anyway, if you stay for a football game, you're an idiot anyway.
Well, that's never going to happen. That is something that I'm sure that sounds good when you write it on paper, but can you imagine like a crowd of drunken, I don't know. Let's go. Philadelphia Eagles fans, drunken Eagles fans, after they just lost to the Giants. You know, they came in there with a backup quarterback, and they're pissed. You think they're going to wait politely for 40 minutes for all the rows in front of them to leave until they storm out of there?
But Rich, what's mystifying is we could poke holes in this in like 3 minutes. No one thought about this. They're just let's just get something. No, well, then how is it possible that you would come up with a plan like this?
They're going to say that. Say we're just going to go 80,000. This stadium is built for 80,000 people. We're going to have 4. They each have their own entrance and exit. So
there's only four.
Okay, fine. So then you put them by the four exits. Now those are so divided up. So if it's 80,000, then each exit 2, 4, 6, 8 is supposed to have 20,000 people. Now they have 10,000 people. So an entrance isn't just one door. So what they would say is we are going to the traffic will be much lighter because it's half the people going through something that was made for double the people. And
but you know how long
course,
it takes to get 10,000 people through with security checks, temperature checks? Dude, that's a long time. It's nice to show up early.
But it's going to be half the time.
But it still takes forever.
No, that argument doesn't hold water because it's going to take half the time to get in because half the people are there. So if it takes forever now, it's going to take half the time.
When do they open the gates? 2 hours before the game? So say it takes 2 hours to get everyone in.
But why? But
on a regular day.
Okay, then it would take an hour to get everyone in.
That's an hour of backup and people all waiting in line right next to each other, smashed against each other.
They'd probably have lines out there. I mean, they'd enforce it as well as they could.
But what happens when it's 5 minutes before kickoff?
Wait, I'm sorry. Someone was talking to me. What?
Oh, that's right. I'm just saying, like, what I think we're expecting the best of people, and we know we're not going to get that. 5 minutes before kickoff, it's not going to be like that. And when the game's over, especially when everyone's leaving at the same time, it's not going to be like that. I just think that they can't feign that they're going to be caring about that.
Say I took the sections and I filled up. How many rows are in the bottom section of a stadium?
Like,
in the lower row. Okay. Say I went every other row and filled up 25 of them. I mean, that expedites the process right there. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, you got to remember it's half the amount of people. So technically, everything should take half the time. So, but, and, I mean, I don't think filing people out is going to be that big an issue. And I certainly don't think it's going to take an hour to file people out. But Will Brinson not only has home trouble at home, he also has a crappy phone. Yeah. Will Brinson.
My friend's a disaster. It's been like moving things by itself for like 2 weeks now. I was in here yelling about like the virus and like how they're like all of a sudden my phone's are ringing. I was like, am I just talking to myself? Apparently I am.
Here's the deal. Here's what I say is that if you have 50% capacity, say it's an 80,000 seat stadium, and the entrances and exits have been made to handle 80,000 people. Now, of course, they're handling 40,000 people. Now, if I went and I allowed certain sections to go every other row, and then you would think, just based on the amount of people and percentages of getting out and how easy it would be to get out of the stadium, that it would not be ridiculous to have people move. I mean, you're going to touch people. It's going to be impossible. You're not going to be 6 feet away from someone. It's just not possible. But I think you can do it without it being chaos or without it taking an hour. And by the way, if you stay, like I said, you weren't on the phone. If you stay for the whole football game, you're an idiot. I don't know anyone who does. I don't know anyone who sits there and goes, I'm going to watch. Even if it's the most exciting game in the world, I'm leaving. But nonetheless, I think it can be done. I mean, listen, you are going to get too close to people. Be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be done. It can be done with the things you're talking about. And I listen to most of what you guys are ranting about. But yeah, you're going to end up touching a bunch of people. You're going to have to be somebody who either has tested positive for the antibodies. And you know, it's like the world is your playground at that point. Somebody who, just doesn't care, which, you know, fits the demographic that we are plenty of those people in this country. And you have to be willing to go and sit and wait and deal with a bunch of additional precautions. I think I don't buy that the math of 50% of the people equals 50% of the time. That's like, you know, like, all right, if I only drink 12 beers, I'm just going to be half as drunk as if I drink 24.
That is true.
No,
that's true. No, what's not true about that?
There's a pretty diminishing returns with the 24.
No, if I do 10 shots, if I do 10 shots, I can walk around. If I do 20 shots, what? I'm on the ground.
Well,
yeah, so
I think you're missing some exponential growth from walking around to lying on the ground dying. Walking around drunk is not halfway to lying on the ground with alcohol poisoning. You know what I mean? Like, that's not.
I counter that argument. I don't think that was a good argument.
Well, whether or not that's going to if everyone behaves themselves and it's all done the way that the NFL wants it to, and everyone files out nice. Faith it will work, but I hope it does.
Did you see that video of the Ozarks? Like, come on.
If you were 24 years old or 23 years old, and you could and you went to the Ozarks, would you have done that?
Dude, I was down at my in-laws this past weekend for 2 days in Riceville Beach in North Carolina, and there's this little place like when you go underneath the main bridge coming into the island called Palm Tree Island, and when the tide is out. There's a big plastic palm tree there, and everybody meets and gathers and drinks beer. I mean, it was slammed. Mason Burr out there.
It's in trouble, isn't it? Isn't North Carolina one of the ones?
North Carolina's been, like, crazy, like, calm about how they're approaching it. Like, Cooper's been very – and while we were down there, it was the 2 weeks after the first phase reopening, and they saw, like, their biggest spike in cases. And, of course, you know, everybody tells you that it's just testing. It's like, okay, all right. Like, you know, sure. Whatever you say.
Let's hope they can do that. 50% would be good. 50% of the stadiums would be nice if they can pull that off.
If I'm 23 years old and they open up some place where there's a bunch of girls, I'm going. It's very difficult to tell a 23-year-old, you know, hey, guy, you know, listen, you think you're invincible. I mean, that's why people go fast in cars, and that's why kids do stupid crap.
No doubt about it. Like, hey, listen, pal, you know, there may or may not be a virus out there. There are definitely 40 or 50, like, attractive girls your age in, like, thong bikinis. So you can either stay here and play Xbox or go out there on the boat. You decide. Like, Xbox won't get you sick.
it also won't get you something else.
Right.
There's also a significant number of presidential support flags out there, too. No,
the two things seem to go hand in hand.
That's why you never wear a condom, you know? Who cares about the diseases?
I never wear a condom. Stopped doing that when I was about 20.
All right.
Condom or church in 20 years.
I don't know. I don't see the need for them. All right. Listen, Will Brinson, you can watch the big podcast over there. What is the name of it again?
You can listen to the Pick Six podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Daily NFL show. Today we did Jared Dubin did a pick a player. He did the Survivor team. You have to pick one player from each team. We created 32 positions, coaches, et cetera. And we talked to him about that. Belichick was the choice for the Patriots.
All right. Very good. Well, listen, Will Brinson, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for coming on with us.
Yeah. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. Take it easy. All right, Rich, what's coming up in the old stackaroo?
Well, Fred, I want to hear about that movie you were talking about. Second of all, we have a clip of the new Rob Gronkowski television show, which debuts this week,
Game On, and it is
a barrel of laughs. It's going to be the Yuck Center. Yuck Center. Yeah.
Well, it's produced by James Corden, so you know that. And you know Corden was just, you know, completely not influenced by his physique. Corden was just like, this guy's really got talent. He wasn't like, ooh, my, wouldn't mind working with this one. But he's married, you know? All right. Here are the headlines.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Stack, 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 98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And I'll tell you this, is that I can tell you in just a matter of moments the very thing that I have right here. And that is the Stack is sponsored by Window Nations. Window Nations, buy two, get two free sale, no down payment, no payments, and 0% financing for 12 full months. Go to windownation.com. What's going on, Rich?
Real quick, Fred, just as an aside before we get into some of the stuff at the Stack, we were talking about Hootie and the Blowfish earlier. Of course, the ghost, anytime you crack a dad joke on the golf course, the ghost of Hootie's face appears from the clouds and gives you a high five. And we were talking about that era of music, and I remembered, I was like, you know, there was a period of about 5 years there in the 90s where alternative radio sucked. It was all of these, like, one-hit wonder, harmless bands. Basically, harmless was the word. And just for kicks and giggles, I went and I Googled 1997 alternative radio charts. And I have found the top 20 songs that were played in alternative radio in 1997. Any guesses as to who's on this list?
Creed.
Creed is way down, but they are on this list. Creed comes in at number 28 with My Own Prison. So that's like the first
okay.
So they just came onto the thing. So this is right before Butt Rock. This is right before the birth of Butt Rock.
Because when I came to 99X, they had Creed was this like massive band and I had never heard of them. And so, Jimmy's Chicken Shack.
Okay, not on here. Just think harmless. Like, as harmless as it gets.
Okay.
Like, we don't want to. I'll start you off. I'll give you number five. Number five. Let's go. So don't you like Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun. That was a big song in alternative radio back.
Okay. The Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Whale?
No, that's way back. No, not on there.
I have a suggestion. What about Third Eye Blind?
Third Eye Blind's number six. Very good. Semi-Charmed Life. That's an okay song. But still, no one's super passionate. Number four, I will give you...
Lord of Mercy.
I just forgot about the Sugars.
I mean, just...
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think of like harmless.
I got it. The word harmless is what gave it away because you guys have talked about, you know, they're always there and they're just vanilla. Foo Fighters.
Okay, no, Foo Fighters are fine, and they're way down on this. For some, I guess they didn't put an album out that year. Everlong was 41.
Oh, all right. Dan said it in my ear, but it's got to be the 20.
20's number 7. 3 a.m. by Matchbox 20 is number 7.
3 a.m. I must be lonely.
Fred, do you remember when the radio station we had, had a music festival headlined by this band? And I went, no one's going to go.
Oh, that's okay. So a story about that is that's the Wallflowers, Jacob Dylan, obviously the lead singer, son of Bob
Dylan.
Nobody
cares about this band.
Well, hang on. So I'm interviewing Jacob Dylan at the festival, and Bob Dylan is playing that night at the same time.
Yeah.
We're in a trailer. The A&R, our station's trailer, the A&R guy, the representative of the band, says, you cannot ask about Bob Dylan, which is ludicrous. I mean, come on, dude. They're playing at the same time at the same festival. So I go, hey, so your dad's playing tonight is my first question. The A&R guy takes his fist and puts a huge dent into the trailer. I was literally asked by an A&R guy not to ask about Jacob Dylan playing the same night as his father played at the same place. All right, so that was number one?
That's number three. Number two, Fred? I'm not joking. First time I heard this, I thought I was, like, listening to, like, the local band radio show. Like, there was this show that came on Sunday nights. It was called Locals Only. I thought it was.
It's not Dive. This was a hit?
Oh, yeah. Dude, Days of the New, this is a massive hit.
Oh, that's right. We still played this when I was there. Yeah. I mean, who's going to remember this band?
Number two, Days of the New. The 1997 sucked.
We played but we played that for years and years and years.
Dude, it's a massive hit. Okay, I'm just, before I give you number one, I'm just going to read you some of the bands that are in the top 20 that are here. How about the Verve Pipe, The Freshman?
Yeah.
A Greedy East Fly Lansing. By Bush.
I don't even know what that song is.
Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
I should have guessed that.
Knock It Up Again. If You Could Only See by Tonic, Fred.
If you could. Our program director started crying during their live acts when he was singing that.
3 a.m. by Matchbox 20. Natalie Imbruglia, Torn. Brimful of Asha by Corner Shop.
Oh, do you remember how critically acclaimed Corner Shop were?
Yeah, and I'm like, who likes Corner Shop?
No, and you're like, what is the other song? Like, what is the other song? She's got the brim full of water on the 45.
And then the number one song, which I never liked, but maybe there's some people who like it. But
I smell sex.
Marcy Playground, number one, rock song of night. Dude, there was a period of like 5 years where music on rock radio. And by the way, there was great music being made during that era, great music being made.
Yeah.
But the radio was playing all of the garbage. So that's why when people
that's
knock,
like post Nirvana at that point.
Yes, and everyone was just, let's get something harmless. And it might have been Hootie that caused it, because Hootie was such a crossover. Everyone loved it. It's like, we want to rock, but not too hard.
Yeah, it went like 10 million. Sugar-ray. That was like one of the things like where like your parents walked into the record store and like, do you have that song with the nice guys? And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's like
meanwhile,
one of...
like a year before that, Tool had put out the Enema album. Like, I mean, like amazing music was being made, and that's what we were getting on radio. I mean, there was – that's why when the whole, Limp Bizkit on the radio thing happened, I wasn't that angry because I was like, at least people are passionate about some of these bands. Limp Bizkit may suck, but at the same time, they started playing System of a Down. They started playing Tool. That are pretty good. They had a huge fan base.
There's no excuse for Limp Bizkit. They ruined radio. They ruined it.
No, they did.
What happened was bands...
it was the bands after them that ruined it, because rock radio was never any bigger than when Limp Bizkit came around. For like a year, it was huge. And then nobody took the torch and ran with it, because everyone was like, oh, let's do the Strokes band, the Hives, and nobody could take that torch and be a mega band. There were no more arena bands after they were done. It's not their fault. Listen, they were
Biscuit's fault.
Motley Crue. Motley Crue didn't kill MTV. Nirvana showed up and took the torch and ran with it. No one followed up Limp Bizkit. Limp Bizkit were going to fade out anyway. They didn't ruin it.
No, the Bizkit
ruined
it.
It was the bands after it that didn't.
The Bizkit ruined it because everyone took a step back and went, what am I doing? Like, people who liked the band, like, within 2 years went, like, what am I doing? This is not the way I want to live my life. And that is my take on the whole thing.
Well, that was like every Poison fan all of a sudden became a Soundgarden fan. Like, you could
Poison,
evolve as
not
a fan.
In Detroit. Not in Detroit.
That's a good
because
point. We
people, because well, the thing is that here's the deal with Poison, is that Poison was, were a joke, and everyone's like they're dead. So, you know the whatever center down here, like the big outdoor one that like Kiss played and Aerosmith played.
Sure.
Like it was called Pine Knob at the time in Detroit, and Poison came and sold the effer out. Came like. It, like when no one was talking about them, they were a joke, and they just sold the effer out.
How big was that place we played with Vince Neil? Like that was like a 3,000 seater, wasn't it? And that wasn't even and that was like outside of Detroit, but that wasn't even Motley Crue. That was just Vince Neil.
Yeah,
and they sure as hell weren't there for us. They never.
Well, that's why like the Jay Giles band and Kiss, they're all like Kiss pretended to record. Alive in Joe Louis Arena, even though it was recorded in a studio. Detroit was the place, man. They liked Hesher music.
Somebody said, yeah. My wife saw Marcy Playground at one of the casinos, and they played Sex and Candy twice.
Oh, yeah.
I would say.
I like Sex and Candy. Who's that fuck?
Dan just said in my headphones, I dare you to name another song. I can't. Like, from Marcy
Playground. Dare you to name another Marcy Playground song.
I don't think they
have another Local H song.
Besides Local H ended up being a pretty good band.
Besides Bound for the Floor? Sorry.
I hated Bound for the Floor. I was not a fan of that. But they made a few albums out of that that were pretty good. Like, they're not a bad band.
I don't know how you got around to there's only so much time in the day. I don't know how you got around to listening to that.
You know me. I listen to everything. Local H is not a bad band.
Get it? You keep. You know how Sex and Candy got written? Is that the guy was sitting around like high and he was like, you know, thinking he was like Kerouac or something and going, Sex and Candy. And they're like, yeah, man.
Yeah, now put any. It, man.
Now just act super mopey and then everyone will love it. Just act super mopey.
Dude, I'm going to 98, and it's even worse. Number one's a good song, but it's like a one-hit wonder. It's Closing Time by Semisonic.
That's not a good song. I read the drummer's book from Closing Time from Semisonic.
What?
Yeah, because it was like
that
navigating.
That guy writes a ton of hits. Like, he wrote a bunch of Avril Lavigne songs?
It was everyone writes Avril Lavigne songs. Butch Walker.
Adele. I think he writes for Adele. And he writes mega hits.
No, he wrote a book about navigating the entertainment industry, the music industry. Yeah. 98, I would know, because 98, I was fully entrenched at 99X.
1 Week by Bare Naked Ladies. That was their big...
One Week, big to look at me.
Which could be the worst song ever recorded, as a matter of fact.
No, it is not. It has the most embarrassing part of a song ever recorded.
Chicken to China, the Chinese chicken.
I mean, he's in there, and he's like, you know what? I can rap. And then you go, no, you're not. You're just a nice Canadian guy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.